The Committee on State and Local Government will come to order. It is Friday, March 14, 2025. The time is now 10:07. Thank you for joining us on this Friday morning. The first item on the agenda is Senate File 1842, Senator Bolden. And just a note that we do have quorum. Good morning, Senator Bolden. You may begin when you are ready.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm grateful to be before you this morning with Senate File 1842. This is a bill that would require Pelsby to adopt rules that require all licensed teachers who are renewing a teaching license to include 2 hours of professional development training on dyslexia, including the effects of dyslexia on the development of foundational reading skills, effective instructional needs for students with dyslexia, and mental and behavioral health comorbidities for students with dyslexia. I know one of my testifiers is going to speak a little bit more about dyslexia itself, but just as an overview, dyslexia is a learning disability that disrupts how the brain processes written language. This makes reading and language-related tasks harder. It is treatable. Depending on where you look, it affects between 7 and 20% of people. And so every teacher is going to encounter students with dyslexia. And so ensuring that they have the resources and skills and training they need to appropriately resource and teach these students is important. And so when it is appropriate, Mr. Chair, I also do have an amendment.
Thank you, Senator Bolden. To your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment, if somebody would be so kind as to move it, would just change the effectiveness date. We want to be sure that we are giving enough time for this to take place, both for teachers who are renewing their license as well as first-time teachers. So this just allows for more time for that.
Thank you, Senator Bolden. Senator McQuaid moves the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Bolden, you had one testifier, is that correct? Rachel Berger. Welcome to the State and Local Government Committee. Please state your name and you may proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Members of the committee, I'm Rachel Berger. I'm representing the Dyslexia Literacy Coalition today. And the Dyslexia Literacy Coalition is made up of local organizations, including the Reading Center, Learning Disabilities Association of America, Decoding Dyslexia Minnesota, the International Dyslexia Association, Groves Learning Organization, Hill Murray, and Arton Gillingham, Minnesota. These organizations are committed to dyslexia through education, training, student support, and advocacy. I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a background on dyslexia today, as we're never really sure how much people come into with this information, and I think it's beneficial for all. Dyslexia is a complex and prevalent learning disorder that affects millions worldwide, manifesting primarily through difficulties in reading, spelling, and writing. It's recognized as one of the most common learning disabilities and poses significant challenges within our educational settings and throughout life. According to the National Institute of Child and Human Health Development, dyslexia impacts 17 to 20% of the population, whether that's diagnosed or not, and most often individuals with dyslexia have not received a diagnosis. So that's about 4 to 5 kids in most typical classrooms. Dyslexia is not bound by demographics. It affects people across various ethnic and socioeconomic backgrounds, both male and female, at the same rates. Its strong impacts in the classroom are seen by teachers every day through difficulties learning to read, processing instructions, spelling, writing, and behavior due to accessibility within the learning environment. When educators are not provided the tools to understand dyslexia and its educational barriers despite effective instruction, it can be really easy to look towards a multitude of negative factors impacting student success versus those that are resourceful and supportive. Students struggling with dyslexia are highly likely to disengage from school, and they're at risk of dropout, juvenile justice interaction, mental health issues, and substance abuse. When a teacher understands how dyslexia might present itself in one of their students, they become a resource. They're empowered to remove learning barriers, differentiate instruction, and provide accommodations to ensure inclusion. So through Minnesota's commitment to the READ Act, educators are now receiving instruction and training on teaching literacy with fidelity that includes all of the important aspects of the science of reading instruction. And this critical bill will drastically increase outcomes for many learners and help prevent unnecessary referrals to special education due to a lack of effective instruction. However, even with systematic, explicit instruction in the science of reading, there is going to be students with learning disorders like dyslexia who require extra support. The two-hour professional development being requested in Senate File 1842 will focus on general awareness, warning signs in order to make timely referrals, and comorbidities that occur along with dyslexia, as well as the accommodations necessary for students with dyslexia to effectively engage in that learning environment. This professional development is one time only during an educator's five-year license renewal, and given the multitude of resources we have here in Minnesota, it should be a free training. Senate File 1842, House File 60 came to us by a St. Paul public school teacher, Representative Mary Frances Clardy, after her experience in the classroom with dyslexic students and how strongly she felt that dyslexia professional development would benefit all teachers in the classroom. I appreciate the committee's time and consideration of this rulemaking change and for the continued commitment to Minnesota students' literacy outcomes through the READ Act and bills like this.
Thank you, Ms. Berger. And members, any questions or comments on the bill? Thank you, Senator Bolden. Really appreciate you taking time and trying to work on this and trying to address this issue. Seeing no further discussion, Senator Gustafson moves Senate File 1842 as amended and is recommended to pass and re-refer to the Education Finance Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The motion prevails. Senate File 1581 as amended is recommended to pass and re-refer to the Education Finance.
Thank you,
Senator Bolden. 1842, sorry. Thank you, Senator Bolden.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. Chair.
Next up, we have Senate File 2043, Senator Wicklund. Senator Wicklund, welcome to the State and Local Government Committee to your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm pleased to be able to present Senate File 2043 today in your committee. Minnesota's healthcare interpreting community plays a vital role in bridging language barriers between healthcare providers and patients. The services interpreters provide to facilitate communication between healthcare providers and limited English proficient patients are essential to providing the best possible quality of care. We also know that there are significant challenges that exist in both providing and accessing interpreter services. This includes accessibility barriers, especially in rural areas, and the significant workforce challenges they are experiencing as we hear of a decrease in new interpreters entering the field. Healthcare interpreting needs are changing, and addressing these changing needs and solving the challenges I mentioned requires deep community collaboration and expertise from the Minnesota healthcare interpreting profession. The bill before you today aims to do just that. Senate File 2043 creates a healthcare interpreter services work group that will be tasked with providing recommendations to the legislature that support and improve access to the critical interpreting services provided across the state. The work group will address challenges with spoken language interpreting, including requirements for registered and certified interpreters, barriers to access, reimbursement, training, and certification issues. This important work will help direct the actions needed to increase access to quality interpreter services for patients, improve healthcare outcomes, and decrease health disparities. It will also help to address the healthcare interpreting workforce shortages. The bill was drafted through a collaborative approach, including input from interpreters, educators, state agencies, health systems, health plans, professional associations, and others. It's evident that accurate and effective communication between patients and healthcare providers is critical to the quality of care Minnesotans receive and the health outcomes they experience. And we have worked on this issue over the years, but have not put in place new or other standards other than the current registry system. I've worked on this, but it was probably 5 or 6 years ago. And so the work group would help us kind of get people back together to start working on this again, and also help us to find out what's happened over the last 10 years since the Department of Health did major work on this topic. Members, I have a delete everything amendment. It's the A3 amendment. And Ms. James helped me with this today. It's mainly, it helps us get the bill into a better form. It doesn't change the definitions or composition or the duties of the work group, but it does make sure that we have a clear understanding of what the Department of Health's responsibilities would be in terms of administrative support and meeting facilitation. It put in some things I had not included around a deadline for appointments and an expiration for the working group. And so I would appreciate if I can answer more questions about it, but I would appreciate being able to adopt it so that the bill becomes kind of better formed.
Thank you, Senator Wicklund. Senator McQuaid moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed say no. The A3 amendment is adopted. Senator Wicklund, any more additional comments?
No more comments. I do have a testifier here.
All right. The testifier can make their way up to the podium. Welcome to the State and Local Government Committee this morning. Please state your name for the record, and you may begin with your testimony.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. My name is Mauricio Montezuca, and I serve on the Board of Directors of Hennepin Healthcare. I also serve on the Health Equity Committee for the American Cancer Society. I am a certified medical interpreter. That's how I landed in this a while ago. And I also am the current vice president of the Upper Midwest Interpreters and Translators Association. So I just want to share with you my perspective on the importance of creating a work group just in order to have a conversation. There is a tremendous need around interpreters and language access for the communities that we serve in every hospital and every clinic. And we are seeing workforce shortage in this space, lack of recognition, lack of standardized levels of interpreting access for all of the patients. And so it is essential that we come to the table and have a discussion about something that is also changing drastically with the new introductions of AI tools and how and this would be either benefiting or affecting the patients that we serve in our communities. So the work group will allow us to come to the table and figure out what is the best outcome and make recommendations in order to make sure that we have the best possible language access for the patients that we serve in our communities.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And members, any questions or comments on this bill? I know Senator Wicklund has been working a long time in some of the interpreter bills. With that, seeing no further discussion, Senate File 2043 is recommended to pass. Senate File 2043, as amended, is recommended to pass and re-referred to the Health and Human Services Committee. All in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed say no. The motion prevails. Senate File 2043, as amended, is recommended to pass and re-referred to Health and Human Services. Thank you, Senator Wicklund. Thank you, sir, for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And hope good luck on your journey going forward.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Senate File 1536. Senator Rasmussen, welcome to the State and Local Government Committee this morning. Thank you for making time and joining us. When you're ready, you may proceed with your testimony or with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I forget, I have the A2 author's amendment. I would appreciate if the committee would move that as an author's amendment, and I'm happy to describe the bill.
All right. Senator Coran moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed say no. The A2 amendment is adopted. Senator Rasmussen, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and especially as we're in the middle and in the heart of tax season, I think it's great that this committee is able to make time to talk about the certified public accounting shortage that the state of Minnesota has. And I hear this from nonprofits, townships, small cities in the district that I represent, that they're having a tough time finding CPAs to do the critical work that they need in the community. And as the Minnesota CPA Association and other national groups have looked at this issue, one of the key barriers that have been identified are some unnecessary requirements that are in current state law. Namely, that we currently require 5 years of college, or equivalent to 150 hours, to sit for the CPA exam. 20 years ago, this used to be 4 years of college or 120 hours, but it was changed. And what has resulted from that is an increased opportunity cost for students that are considering going into the CPA profession. And when you take the additional cost of that year of schooling plus lost earnings, it can easily be a $100,000 opportunity cost for that additional year of college. And I will note that the requirement in Minnesota law isn't that they take a fifth year in accounting. It could be a fifth year in anything. And I was recently talking to a constituent who's a CPA who said that to finish out his credit requirements was taking golf classes, art classes, and other things that were non-related to accounting. So the bill before the committee would address this issue by creating alternative pathways to licensure that have broad support from accounting associations and is also supported by research. This bill is very similar to a bill that this committee heard last year. Last year, there was opposition from national accounting groups, but they have recently shifted their position and now support alternative paths to CPA licensure like the one in this bill. And there are dozens of states across the country that are moving in this direction. The bill before the committee addresses concerns about the 150 semester hour requirement. And what the research shows is that this has led to a 15% decline in students pursuing CPA careers, and especially impacts individuals and students coming from economically disadvantaged situations. What the bill does is it would create an alternative pathways. The first pathway would be an accounting bachelor's degree with 2 years of general work experience, so it'd be swapping that extra year of college for an additional year of relevant work experience. The second path would be pursuing a master's degree in accounting with 1 year of general work experience. And we would retain the current path until it sunsets in 2030 for currently enrolled students. Regardless of the pathway, students must sit and successfully pass the CPA exam, which has always been the case. I would also say, just to highlight a couple other sections of the bill that are important, Section 4 enables automatic mobility for CPAs, which is another trend that we're seeing nationwide, where CPAs who are licensed and in good standing in other states can serve clients in Minnesota while adhering to Minnesota laws. And this is another way, especially for our border communities, that we can increase business opportunities for CPAs and also access to CPAs that wish to move to the state of Minnesota. We would also be shifting licensing authority from NASBA, which is a national nonprofit, to the Minnesota Board of Accountancy, similar to how driver's licenses operate across states. Mr. Chair, happy to talk more about some of the details of the bill, but at this point, would like to go to testifiers.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. First up, we have Cap O'Rourke from Minnesota Small Cities. And next after him is Boz Bostrom. You can make your way to the table. Well, welcome to the State and Local Government Committee. Please state your name for the record and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Cap O'Rourke. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Association of Small Cities. We advocate on behalf of the over 700 cities that have populations under 5,000. We are extremely supportive and thankful for the efforts of Senator Rasmussen. Our cities have been seeing, we are kind of the canary in the coal mine, as there are significantly increasing costs for our small communities to pay their auditors, but more importantly, we have a number of communities. I probably have three or four cities right now that have RFPs out for new auditors that are just going unanswered. So we have this growing issue of communities not being able to access certified CPAs and get their services taken care of. So this is one of the steps that we are pursuing in the right direction to get more people into the industry, into the business, so that there are more options available for our communities. So we are really in support of this, and we hope that you act favorably upon it.
Thank you, sir. Next up, please state your name for the record and you may proceed.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Boz Bostrom. I'm the chair of the Minnesota Society of CPAs Board of Directors. The MNCPA is a professional organization representing 7,500 members who work in accounting. And we come to the Capitol, we're not just representing ourselves, but all the clients that we serve, individuals, family businesses, Fortune 500 companies, nonprofits, and the government agencies Mr. O'Rourke referenced. I've also been an accounting professor up at the College of St. Benedict and St. John's University for the past 21 years. And before becoming a prof, I worked in public accounting for 9 years. I support Senate File 1536 and thank Senator Rasmussen and the co-authors for carrying the bill. The demand for accountants continues to rise due to complexity, but the supply of accountants is declining. Over a recent 6-year period, the number of those taking the CPA exam fell by over 30%. Now, a significant barrier to enrollment in accounting programs, which I see every day as an educator, is the current licensure requirement. It mandates an additional 30 college credits beyond a standard bachelor's degree. Now, students are recognizing that the CPA is the gold standard, but many simply can't afford to take that extra year, that time, or that money in order to earn those extra credits. Now, I am an educator, but I will say that an extra year of on-the-job training is far more valuable than forcing those students to take an additional 30 credits beyond the bachelor's degree. There is academic research that shows that these additional credits have not resulted in better prepared CPAs. And in fact, because of that, at St. Ben's and St. John's, our curriculum, we prepare students to take the CPA exam with a bachelor's degree. And in practice, we advise the additional 30 credits to be completed through low-cost community college options. Senator Rasmussen referenced golf. That is true. We've also referred them to online personal fitness, online fitness walking, photography, canoeing, and yoga. That just doesn't make sense. It's important to note that there's more than 40 states, including Minnesota, that allow their candidates to sit for the exam, pass the exam with 120 college credits, but the current rule would then say you would have to go back and earn an additional 30 credits in these types of courses or others in order to become a licensed CPA. You may have heard some arguments that an additional pathway could reduce the quality of work. There's no data to support that, and that's why there's no opposition here today. So because we've done everything grounded in the research and grounded in the data. So in closing, Senate File 1536, it would eliminate an unnecessary barrier to entry. It'll maintain the rigorous requirement of passing the CPA exam, and research has shown that it will increase the supply of those able to provide those critical services for the people who need them. So thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Chair, and welcome to the State Capitol. I appreciate you being here. Next up, we have Bob Cedergren and Samantha Metcalf.
Senator Jean?
Yes, Senator Johnson-Stewart.
Can I offer a comment very quickly?
Sure.
Just in case anybody's wondering, even technical colleges per credit costs run in the $200 a credit range. So at the University of Minnesota, the per credit cost is about $550, but students are still required to pay fees on top of that. So an additional 30 credits, somebody may take, you know, underwater basket weaving or yoga or whatever, it's still going to cost them $200 a credit. So anywhere from $6,000 to, you know, the sky's the limit, but at the University of Minnesota, that would cost about $18,000. I just wanted to emphasize that in response to your testimony. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Senator Johnson-Stewart. Bob Cedergren,
yes.
Yeah, please, yep. You can please state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Bob Cedergren, and I'm a past chair of the Minnesota Society of CPAs Board of Directors. I've been a CPA in public practice for 37 years, and I am a partner with a top 20 national CPA firm, Whifley LLP. I support Senate File 1536 and thank Senator Rasmussen and the co-authors for carrying this bill. Throughout my career, I've seen the profession change significantly. Earning a CPA credential is a commitment, and rightfully so, given the financial complexities CPAs navigate. The work of CPAs is so impactful that every state regulates the profession. We support and work with state regulators whose role is to protect the public. I can tell you from my own experience and through conversations with colleagues throughout the country and members of the Minnesota Society of CPAs that we have a significant shortage of CPAs. As you have heard, currently the additional 30 credit hours beyond the bachelor's degree have proven to not have worked out as intended when passed nearly 20 years ago, and it has created unnecessary barriers for those wanting to become CPAs. The additional 30 credits are estimated to cost, you know, close to $25,000 with tuition fees and all the other pieces that go along with that, plus delayed entry into the workforce costing an average of $75,000 a year in economic benefit for the individual. Senate File 1536 would allow candidates to use a bachelor's degree with 2 years of experience or a master's degree with 1 year of experience. The current option of 150 college credits with 1 year of experience would also remain through the transition period, as was previously stated. It is important to note that all candidates will still be required to pass the CPA exam. Studies by the University of Chicago, MIT, Utah State University, and the Center for Audit Quality all consistently show that the 150 credit requirement reduces the number of students who select accounting as a major, which has led to the shortage of CPAs nationwide. Last year, when I was before this committee, Minnesota was the only state with active legislation. Today, more than 20 states have active legislation, with another 15 states expected to do so this year. Three states, Ohio, Utah, and Virginia, have already passed legislation similar to what is being proposed. You have also heard about CPA mobility and what effect the changes could have for Minnesota CPAs. Mobility is the ability to practice across state lines without applying for a CPA certificate in each state, similar to how the driver's license works. This bill will create automatic mobility and allow CPAs from other states to serve clients in Minnesota if the CPA is licensed and in good standing with that state. Those CPAs would also be under the jurisdiction of the Minnesota Board of Accountancy and subject to Minnesota law. I served on a national task force formed by the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy to evaluate the licensure requirements while working to maintain mobility, and Minnesota was credited with being the leader in addressing the CPA shortage issue nationwide. Both the American Institute of CPAs and the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy are now supportive of these additional pathways to licensure and have endorsed a plan similar to what is being proposed in Senate File 1536. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members for your consideration. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Ms. Metcalf. Please state your name for the record and you may proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Samantha Metcalf, and I'm the managing principal of CLA's Minneapolis office. I am also a proud CPA, a first-generation graduate and minority who most likely would not have graduated with an accounting degree and pursued my CPA had this 150-credit rule been in place. Our CLA's roots date back more than 70 years in Minnesota to our founding in 1953. CLA employs more than 1,000 people in Minnesota and is the largest public accounting firm in the state with locations in 10 cities. We strongly support Senate File 1536, introduced by Senator Rasmussen and co-authors, to address the critical CPA shortage. This bill is crucial for licensing, workforce development, and public protection. The demand for CPA services is growing while the supply for CPAs is shrinking. I think you've heard that a few times this morning. Our Minnesota offices handle over 24,000 tax returns and 3,200 assurance engagements annually. To meet this increasing demand, we have embraced technology and alternative pathways to the profession, but this does not replace the needs for CPAs for that technical experience and client relationships. Creating additional pathways will attract more students to accounting while maintaining high standards through the CPA exam, which has an initial pass rate of 50%. We value on-the-job training and mentoring over unrelated coursework. Our internship program is crucial for building our talent pipeline at CLA, but we're seeing a decline in those full-time interns as students are focusing on that 150-hour credit requirement instead of getting real-world experience. The nonprofit sector, our largest practice area in Minnesota, contributes significantly to the state's economy, supporting more than 385,000 jobs. With 4,200 nonprofits requiring annual audits, the CPA shortage makes this task more challenging and more costly. Additional pathways to CPA licensure will better serve the public by ensuring adequate oversight and assurance of public and private funds. Passing Senate File 1536 is critical for our profession's future and meeting community needs. By reintroducing pathways similar to those two decades ago, we're actually modernizing to meet current demands. The change will strengthen our profession and bring a new generation of CPAs ready to serve our workforce and community. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Metcalf, for joining us today. Next up, we have State Auditor Julie Blaha. Welcome to the State and Local Government Committee today, this morning. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and members. My name is Julie Blaha, and I am your state auditor. And I'm here in strong support of this bill. But first off, happy Pi Day to all who celebrate. I hope a round treat is in your future. Now, the shortage, the less fun things, the shortage of CPAs and finance staff is at a crisis point in the U.S. right now. One of the most popularly quoted statistics is that 75% of all CPAs can retire today. And Minnesota, we have also seen local indicators. Here are the ones I'm noticing the most. At least once a week, we get a panic call from a local entity who cannot find an auditor to meet statutory requirements. One small entity, in fact, up north, talked about how she went through 19 firms before she found one that would even bid on her audit. And another indicator that I think is really telling is there are even entities who are very vocal about changing my office's authority about where we could audit. There are them that are coming back saying they'd like us to take their audit back because they're not able to find an auditor at this point. So the answer to all of these are not going to be any one thing. But I think all of them have an element of focus. You know, we need to focus our technology on what helps us get work done more efficiently. We're going to need to focus our state requirements and regulations so they focus on what gets at risk the best. And when it comes to hiring, we need to focus on what works. An extra year of college is generally not the most efficient way to get a CPA ready for real work. And this is an odd thing for me to say, by the way. A lot of you know I'm a former math teacher. I think I have sat in this exact chair, possibly, and spoke against changing licensure requirements for teachers. So, of course, when this came up, my first thought is, are you trying to get by on the cheap? Are you just trying to go and find a way to, you know, go buy cheaper? And so I asked my people. I wanted to make sure that I was doing right by them. Found out that most of them came in under the previous requirement. So most of my auditors do not have this extra year of college, and they're amazing. I asked the new people, okay, would this feel like, you know, we're undervaluing you? It's like, do it. You just got to do it. We've got to have other ways to get in there. So if you want to support local entities, if you want to support the profession, if you want to make sure that the overtime goes down for auditors, really right now, if you know an auditor, you probably haven't seen them for a while because they're doing a ton of overtime. Everyone's trying to help out their grandkids' school district. They don't have time to get their audit in, but they're going to try to get it in. People are working extremely hard. We need to give them some relief and also support our local entities. Thank you.
Thank you, State Auditor Blaha. Senator Rasmussen, any remarks before I go to the committee members?
Yes, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to start off with gratitude and just really appreciate the bipartisan support on this bill and for Auditor Blaha's leadership on this issue, and also the ongoing conversations with some of the national groups that, when Minnesota kicked off this conversation, had some questions and concerns. I just wanted to underscore the why this bill is so important. One is it increases opportunities for students who are looking to become CPAs and get into this in-demand profession. And then it also helps Minnesota's economy by creating more CPAs. And it's also good for clients. You heard from some of them today, whether they be cities, townships, nonprofits across the state who are looking for these services to make sure that their books are in order. And I would just also underscore, Mr. Chair, that there is a sense of urgency. Minnesota last year kicked off this national conversation, and we have seen great movement across the nation. And it would be unfortunate if Minnesota didn't put this into effect this year and move forward with this bill to make sure that Minnesota students and our economy can benefit from the wide support for creating these alternative pathways. So with that, Mr. Chair, happy to take any member questions or comments.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. Any questions or comments from committee member Senator Curran?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Senator Rasmussen, bringing this forward. I've had this bill a couple years, and it's good to see finally getting it, hopefully across the finish line and all the way across the governor's desk. And the good news is it's highly focused on what are the skills necessary to become a good licensed CPA and to get rid of the unnecessary, no offense to basket weavers, but if it's not a requirement that isn't focused explicitly on the job itself or the skills necessary to accomplish a job, we've seen across the board, every single industry is struggling, and we put so many barriers in there, but now they just want somebody that desires skills and abilities, and you grow your own with the most valuable experience that anybody in CPA is when they finally get to do the real job. So the sooner we get them there with the proper highly focused skill sets, the better off we'll be. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Crane, and thank you for your work. Senator Gustafson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to echo what Senator Curran was saying, too. And I don't know the last time I've seen a bill that had this wide-ranging amount of co-authors. Like, this is quite an accomplishment in and of itself. So great job. But I just wish we would do this with more stuff. I think it's true. You know, so much of what we learn is out there doing the job. And like Auditor Blaha said, nothing to take away from the hard work of licensed professionals who are doing things. And we don't want to, you know, disrespect that and the journey that they took to get there. But we have a workforce issue, and if this can help, we should do this with other things as well. And I would just leave it to you to find co-authors that range like this for more bills that improve the workforce. So thank you so much.
Senator Rasmussen, any closing comments? With that, seeing no further discussion, Senate File 1536, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. And our final testifier, our final bill is Senate File 1246 by Senator McEwen that will be joining us via Zoom. Senator McEwen, please, whenever you're ready, you may begin, and your testifier is also here.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. First of Senator all, I McEwen. Just want to thank you and the committee very much for allowing me to present the bill from Duluth today and remotely. So thank you very much for accommodating us in that. First of all, Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment an author's amendment that does a small language correction.
Yes, we do have copies of the amendment, Senator McEwen.
Okay, very good. Could we go ahead and adopt that?
Senator Johnson Stewart moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye. Aye. All opposed say no. The A1 amendment is adopted. Senator McEwen.
Thank you very much. Senate file 1246, as amended, is a request from St. Louis County. It amends chapter 383C, a chapter of law that only applies to St. Louis County. The modifications in this bill do not affect any other local unit of government. Senate file 1246 modifies language in the county's unclassified civil service law to grant greater flexibility to the county board regarding deputy administrators. In addition, the bill repeals some dated and obsolete sections from the chapter. Mr. Jim Gottschald, deputy administrator for St. Louis County, is there with you in person to provide additional details regarding the bill's provisions. As I am told, there's no known opposition to this bill as it only applies to St. Louis County. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator McEwen. We have Deputy Administrator Jim Gottschald. Welcome to the State and Local Government Committee. Please state your name for the record, and you may begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Jim Gottschall, Deputy County Administrator for St. Louis County. Thank you, Senator McEwen, for carrying our bill, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate File 1246. As the Senator referenced, St. Louis County has a statute that was written specifically for the county. It covers, among other things, our classified civil service. We have approximately 1,900 employees, and about 98% of them participate in our classified service. And we also have a very small number of department heads and other officials that participate in what we call our unclassified service. So on line 212 in your packet, we have a word strike that removes the reference to the number 2, which gives broader flexibility to our county board and our county administrator to appoint deputy administrators to meet the needs of St. Louis County. Next is the 2 repeal sections. The first of which is it's 383C.07 that gives authority to the county board to make appointments for laypersons to serve on various boards and committees. We've utilized this for many, many years, and it works really well for internal county boards, committees like our Extension Committee, Planning Committee, Board of Adjustment. What we experience, though, when we have individuals appointed to serve on external committees, like the Housing, Northeast Minnesota Housing Consortium, or the Arrowhead Library System, or various sanitary districts, sometimes those boards have their own term durations. And when they have a term duration in their bylaws, that might be 2 years or 4 years, and the county can only make 3-year appointments, it gets a little complicated in how long they serve on these boards and committees. So by striking or repealing this section of law, the board will just make appointments that meet the needs of those, you know, whether they're internal or external boards or commissions. And finally, we have an obsolete section that dates back to just a little bit over 100 years ago, which states how the county supports the various historical work in St. Louis County. Now, St. Louis County does have a historical society, and like all other counties in Minnesota, we follow Chapter 138. And this chapter that's specific to St. Louis County is unnecessary, and so this is just some cleanup. And with that, I would just I'll wrap up my testimony and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Deputy Administrator Gottschall. Members, any questions or comments? How long was your drive here, sir, joining us?
Probably too long but we don't want to leave anything to chance. About 2 hours.
Well, thank you for taking the time to join us and meeting us down here at the state capitol. Seeing no further discussion, Senate File 1246, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion. Again, thank you for taking the time, and thank you, Senator McEwen.
Thank you very much.
And with that, the State and Local Government Committee is adjourned.